more pampered, more sophisticated at any time. We've got Blu-ray plasmas, Wi-Fi laptops, iPod-enabled cars with GPS. We've got the best choice of foods, entertainment, education than we have ever had as a nation. It couldn't get better for us. Except, at the same time as all this good stuff is happening, dissatisfaction, depression, desperation actually mark the mood of most Australians. Did you know that? The psychologists have been monitoring this for the last decade. It's nothing to do with economic conditions. As a nation, we cannot find contentment. We cannot find security. There seems to be nothing that will satisfy us. At alarming rates, youth particularly suffer from depression. Why is that? Never been better. And yet, the statistics, the facts are there. Why is that? Well, I think the answer is actually in John 6 that we're going to be looking at tonight. Jesus claims here to be the real substance of life, and as such, we need to trust him for all things pertaining to life. So, if you haven't already, keep your Bible open at John 6, page 793. You know that our series so far, we've been looking at Jesus' engagement with people. As Jesus goes through the area of Galilee and Palestine, he meets people, and every time he meets people, there's some great change. And normally when people think about this passage you're looking at tonight, they're thinking of the little guy with lunch, right? We're not looking at the guy with lunch. Sorry to disappoint people who are hoping for a little guy with lunch story meets Jesus. It's actually the crowd that we want to look at tonight, the hungry crowd. It is they who have much to learn from their engagement with Jesus. Everyone knows about Jesus feeding the 5,000. I mean, anyone who's been to Sunday school knows that. The little guy takes his lunch to Jesus. He's got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, probably kind of little small sardines or something like that. And Jesus takes this food and turns it into a feast for 5,000 men. Who knows how many women and children were there at the same time. And then the kid goes home, you imagine, and Mum, guess what happened for lunch today? Why weren't you at school? So the little guy becomes the hero of the story. Actually, it should be his mum who remembered lunch that day. The thing that happens with the crowd is that they recognise that this is an astonishing sign. It's a miracle with a message. The crowd gets it. There is something dramatic has happened here, but they struggle to grasp the meaning of this sign. When they see the miraculous bread out on the borders of Israel, out in the wilderness really, what happens is that the crowd's mind goes back to Exodus chapter 16, where God provided manna for the people of Israel out in the desert. Moses is leading the people out of Egypt toward the promised land. And in a place where there is no food, God miraculously provides manna, food, bread, out of heaven, every day. Kind of a daily reminder to the people of Israel. God is supplying everything here. God is in control. God is sustaining you. God's purpose is being worked out here as we find our way through the desert toward the promised land. So this crowd of 5,000 men and extra women and children, as they eat the bread and eat the fish, it starts to dawn on them. Jesus has done something very Moses-like here. He's fed us for nothing in the wilderness. Have a look at verses 14 and 15. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 17 and 18, Moses actually spoke about a prophet and a king who would come after him. And the crowd are sort of trying to put two and two together, and they come up with the fact that, hey, this Jesus, he must be the new Moses, the great prophet, the king who is to come. Maybe he will be the guy who will lead us out of exile, this exile imposed on us by the Romans. And just as the crowd is kind of muttering about this to one another, what does Jesus do? Well, he runs away and hides in the mountains. He doesn't want to be made king. He's got an agenda quite different to coming and beating up on the Romans. Actually, he wants to save Israel and the Romans. You see, Jesus is not the new Moses. He is, in fact, the new manna. And so in verses 16 through 24, Jesus comes back down from the hill after the disciples have got in their boat and they've gone back over to the other side of the lake. Jesus walks on the water, catches up with them in the boat, gets into the boat, calms the storm, and then, bam, miraculously they're over to the other side already. Amazing. Surely this means that Jesus is God, right? Well, John's gospel doesn't make a big deal of that at all. But yeah, that's what happened. The only significance of those events is that now the crowd has to come looking for Jesus again. He's given them the slip. They've looked around over on the far side of the lake, they hear a rumour he's gone back across, and eventually they catch up with Jesus in verses 25 onwards, and their question is, how did you get here? How did you do that? And Jesus doesn't say, well, actually, I walked on the water and calmed the storm and did the boat thing. He says, no. Jesus turns the question back to their motive. Why are you looking for me? Jesus says. He exposes their motive there in verse 25. And then, verse 26, he says, I think your motive is this. You're looking for a free lunch. Have a look at verse 26. I tell you the truth, you are looking for me not because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. It's about the bread. I want to bring a visual aid with me tonight. The bread's pretty boring as a visual aid. Big bread. Bread, isn't it? What's the big deal with bread? It's hard for us to get excited about plain bread. I think maybe if Jesus was around today, maybe he would have done this with, you know, steak and potatoes, or maybe he would have done it with, you know, a nice kind of chicken wrap with avocado and tomato on top and a latte on the side. This is kind of, bread is the basic food of life. Bread is, you've got to have bread to live on Jesus' day. If you were a farm labourer, do you know how much you got paid every day? You got paid enough to buy a loaf of bread. One day, one piece of bread, one loaf of bread. So, by the way, no bread, you go hungry. You miss out. So bread is the substance of life. And Jesus is saying, look, you've been seeking me just to get some free bread, but you're going to be hungry again tomorrow. Now Jesus makes it very clear in verse 27 that he has another kind of bread in mind, spiritual bread, he calls it. The crowd soon understand, okay, Jesus is taking this conversation on another tack. And so they ask a question. They get it, that it's supposed to be spiritual bread. And in verse 28, they ask their question. What must we do to do the works God requires? Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. As conversation turns, Jesus engages the crowd now at the point of, if you like, their higher desires, higher needs. They get it, it's not about sufficient bread. And so they ask a very profound question. It is a profound question, isn't it? What must we do to do the things that God requires? Ultimately, what does God want from you and me? Is there some great feat? Is there some noble quest? Is there some grand achievement that will kind of register with God? And God's really just waiting for me to do this for him. What must we do to do the works that God requires? Jesus says, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. The work of believing. Have you ever thought about believing as work? It's interesting, isn't it? Believing is kind of labour. Believing is effort. It's achievement of some kind. And it is. Believing in Jesus, the one whom God has sent, is intensely practical, and it's going to take effort and work. And I'm going to get to this a little bit later on. The crowd doesn't yet know what kind of work it is. But I wonder if your faith ever seems like work to you. Is there any exertion involved for you in believing in Jesus? We're going to explore this in a minute. So the crowd pick up on Jesus' call for faith. That's what's happening in verse 30. Have a look at it. Jesus, you want us to put our faith in you? Okay. They ask him, what miraculous sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Kind of a bizarre question, don't you think? I mean, they've just been over there on the far side of the lake. Jesus has fed them, you know, all with bread and fish. And they get it as a sign so that they want to make him king. They probably don't know. They just walked across the lake on water, got into the boat, calmed the storm, and then got to the other side. And they're asking him for a sign. Another sign. What is that? I think, you know, what the crowd really wants is to take faith out of the equation altogether. Jesus, we want you to do something so compelling, so completely mind-blowing, that even the toughest nut, the biggest skeptic, the greatest doubter is just going to fall on their face and acknowledge you as God. That's what we want. Make it easy for us. No, it'd be hard, not hard work. Jesus, what miraculous sign will you do for us? The work that God requires is to believe in me. See, it's not about believing that Jesus is the miracle worker who can feed you with bread on demand. It's about believing in Jesus as the real substance of life that has come down from heaven. This is the fulfillment of Old Testament manna. He is the bread of life. That's what he's calling people to believe about him. Jesus is not another Moses. He is the true manna, the bread of life. He is, well, if you haven't got Jesus, you've got nothing. You don't have the fundamental thing of life, bread. Have you got faith in Jesus as the basis of your satisfaction in life? Have you got faith in Jesus to be your bread, your security, the basis on which you live your life? You see, the hard work of faith is actually setting aside all the alternatives, I think. You believe Jesus really is the bread of life? Great. But you still spend your energy going after the alternatives. Do you really think that another holiday will satisfy the travel bug? Or will it just lead to more travel? Will recognition from your boss at work, you know, maybe a pay rise, maybe a promotion, is that going to fill your tank for a great long period of time? I think, well, my experience is it lasts until as long as they ask you to do overtime in your new role. And then it's no more fun. Do you think that your kids or your grandchildren's success at school or music or sport is actually going to make your life any different, any better? Those things are good things. They're not wrong in themselves. But they are not bread. They don't satisfy you. They don't satisfy your longings. Because you see, no matter which of those things you pile into your life, more of this and more of that, that nagging hunger and thirst is still there. It doesn't go away. The work that God wants from you is to believe in Jesus Christ. The same faith that comes to Jesus for the very first time and says, God, will you please forgive me for my sins? That's the same faith that keeps coming to God, trusting Jesus every day to be your bread. The gospel is more than merely a kind of ticket to heaven when you die. The gospel of Jesus is that he is risen and that he is ascended now and that he is your bread. Everything that you need for wholeness, if you like, everything that is life, and health, and purpose, and security, relationship. The work that God wants from you is faith. Believing that Jesus will fill every corner of your life with good things. This is kind of so basic, so elementary, we kind of don't get it yet. It's like Watson and Holmes, you know, Sherlock Holmes, the great detective, very, very sharp mind, and his bumbling assistant Watson. I love Watson, okay. Sherlock Holmes and Watson go camping, and they pitch their tent in an open field, and during the night, Holmes wakes up Watson and kind of says, "Wake up, Watson, look at the stars, and tell me what you see." And from the sleeping bag, Watson sort of peers out and looks up at the stars, and he says, "I see millions of stars. And if even only some of them have planets, some of those planets could be like Earth, and maybe they would support life." And Holmes says, "Shut up, Watson. Someone's stolen our tent." it's so obvious that we don't see it. Jesus spelled it out for us simply. I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry. He who believes in me will never be thirsty. That's what's happened here in John chapter 6. Jesus sees this crowd that is hungry, but it's hungry for the wrong thing. You see, true satisfaction, real significance, life itself, is only received by those people who put their faith in Jesus. All the other options in life, they're going to fail you. They're going to let you down. They will leave you hungry tomorrow, or the day after, probably the day after that as well. We need to commit our way fully to Jesus. It's kind of dangerous to ask this question, but what are you really hungry for? What is it that you really want from life? What matters to you? What's really important? The crowd came to Jesus because they just wanted to get fed. Some more fish and some more bread. Jesus actually wanted to satisfy a far deeper hunger than that. He is the bread of life. If you want to be satisfied, Jesus promised that you will never go hungry. You want security in your life, if you want to do something worthwhile, you want significance, you will never go thirsty with Jesus. Yeah, trust him for that. I'm guessing as I look out here tonight that most of us kind of nod in agreement to this. Yeah, I think that's right. The interesting thing is, in any kind of batch of Christians, it's amazing how many people hedge their bets. You know what I mean by that? In effect, they don't really trust that Jesus is bread, the bread of life. Yeah, I believe that Jesus is going to get me to heaven, but I'm not really sure about how it's going to go for me now. And so I want Jesus, and I want some other bread too that I will find for myself, just in case he doesn't come through for me the way I'd like. And I reckon for a lot of Christians, that's the reason that they kind of limp along in life. You know, kind of up a bit, down a bit. Sometimes experiencing profound joy and a reality in their relationship with Jesus, and other times it's just like, well, I'm keeping up appearances. I'm pedaling a bike and keep up with the game. The reason that struggle takes place, I think, is precisely because they've got some faith in Jesus, but they're also trying to meet the basic needs of their life some other way. I'm an expert teacher of bike riding, mate. Two examples, fine examples of bike riding boys in the room, there's another one somewhere else. Okay, I can do kids teaching, learning how to ride a bike. Now when you're teaching a kid to ride a bike, there's a certain point where they've got it. Like they're on the bike, trainer wheels are off, they're a little bit wobbly, and what they start to do is they kind of stick a leg out the side, just as they're driving along, right? And they've got one leg pedaling, and the other leg out the side like this, kind of like an extra spare training wheel or something. What really needs to happen is to commit that second leg to both pedals. Now it's amazing how they take off when they've got both feet on the pedals. You've got to commit to the bike. You need to commit to Jesus, both feet, on both pedals. If you're like the kid that can't commit to the bike, answer this. Who do you think is best able to satisfy both your basic needs and your deepest longings in this life? Who is best able to do that? Take a look around at the world that tries to function without God. Have those people really found bread that satisfies? Or is there a reason that depression rates, crime rates, stress indicators, all that stuff is just going through the roof, no matter how good our standard of living is? Is there a reason for that, do you think? Have you been listening carefully to the book of Ecclesiastes as we've been reading it? Surely that's the message. A world without God will never satisfy you. A world without God will not satisfy you. On the other hand, Jesus, the bread of life, says, the one who comes to me will never be hungry, the one who believes in me will never be thirsty. Let me paint some pictures of what believing in Jesus will look like. It means taking your faith into every area and every interaction of your life. Faith means expecting that God will show up at work tomorrow morning. When you show up to work, God will be there. And when you go to the party on Friday night, it means God will be there with you. When you go to the shops, when you go to the classroom, when you're on the beach, it is actually God's presence in every area of our lives that fills our hunger and quenches our thirst for something more. But there is a risk involved that I should tell you about. You see, when you venture out into God's world, believing that He is with you, knowing that He is with you, then a point will come when you've got to act on it. There was a time, there will be a time when faith becomes work. We'll find ourselves in some place, I don't know where it's going to be for you, where you'll have a choice. Either we can do right by God, or we can kind of fit in with the guys and the girls around us, whatever it is that they're doing. If we decide for God over and against what everybody else is doing, then the kind of spotlight is going to go right on us. And what are we going to do at that moment? Is God going to show up then when the spotlight falls on us? Will He honour the decision that I've made? Will He show me what to say next? When the temptation comes at me and I just want to do it, will there be a way out the way He promised? At times, trusting God means you're living on the edge. That exciting part of life, when you're living on the edge. We fear those risks. I want you to consider for a moment some other risks. The risks of not trusting God to show up in the midst of your world. If you operate as though Jesus is not present, if you operate on the basis that He is not the bread of life, what happens is that in our own mind only, He becomes less and less real to us, and smaller, He becomes a kind of a rumour, a distraction, a kind of a nice theological concept that we can discuss, you know, and debate in abstract. Not trusting and expecting God to be involved in our world exchanges the true and living God for a small g God that you can stick in your pocket and just pull out when you need it. You know, in your parking spot or something. And that little small g God in your pocket doesn't threaten the status quo. It just kind of comforts and sedates us until we feel pretty much nothing. We stop feeling hungry. We stop feeling thirsty. And we're left working for bread that goes rusty and mouldy, usually. That's the kind of bread we end up with. Stale, mouldy bread. Taking our faith in Jesus into every day is kind of exciting. See what Jesus is going to do. When we commit our way to following Him, we follow Jesus' example when we start to do that. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Jesus got His hands dirty. Actually, He got His clothes all bleeding and dirty and ended up on a cross. He got involved. He was proactive. You know, if we're the vine and Jesus is the branches, I think sometimes we're more preoccupied with kind of, you know, leaf rot and tree fungus instead of fruit. We're known by our fruits. We've been involved in the lives of the people around us. That's how we get connected with our community. By faith, we expect God to show up when we are there, when we're trusting Him. You know, on a Friday night, three windows in our church got broken. That one over there, and that one there. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I knew that the church windows had been broken when Kate was standing on the toilet seat going, "They're at it again, they're breaking the windows," and there they go, four of them running up the road. And, that kind of got us messed up for a while. We kind of get angry. We want to get those four guys back for breaking our windows. But it's interesting, as you reflect on that, what are we going to do with those guys? I mean, we can call the police and set up security cameras and we can nail them next time, right? Well, yeah, but we could also see if we can connect with those guys in some way. They obviously need bread. They are really hungry. We're just looking in the wrong place. So either we can run away from the messed up young people on the street at night and from the drug dealers and from the graffiti gangs, or we can actually try and turn the pubs into chapels and the drug dealers into evangelists and the graffiti gangs into home groups. We could do something like that, couldn't we? Yeah. If Jesus really is the bread of life, actively trusting Him every day will mean that we're never hungry and we're and we're never thirsty because we're actually getting involved in real life. The work of faith is deeply satisfying and truly worthwhile. Believing in Jesus will actually turn your life into